You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world every weekday. It is Monday, November the 23rd. You'll be pleased to know that I am back on home soil here in TW11. It's a pretty pleasant autumn morning as things stand as we build up this week to the 2020 running of the Ladbrokes Trophy at Newbury, one of the great staying handicap steeplechases of the season. And during the course of this week, I will be speaking to plenty of connections with leading fancies for the race. But you'll forgive me if I look back for a second at what was a great weekend of jumps action here in the UK, headlined by Bristol DeMay and his wonderful performance, his heartwarming performance, no less, in the Betfair Chase at Haydock Park, a very soggy Haydock Park. In a rare interview, Bristol DeMay's owner Simon Maneer will speak to me in depth and at some length about what the horse and what racing means to him later in this edition. But first, it's a question of how to spend it. How does this sport spend and distribute the £40 million loan that it's just been given by the government as hardship relief from the period that it's been affected by COVID-19? A question in a moment that I'll be putting to David Armstrong, the chief executive of the Racecourse Association. But I'm really pleased to say that Lydia Hislop joins me this Monday morning. Lydia, what do we need to know here about this loan?
Virtually everything is unknown at this stage. Now, there's a shock with our government and coronavirus. They released a press release last Thursday. Government announces £300 million sport winter survival package to help spectator sports in England. And in that, they said that they will support sports from national governing bodies through to clubs impacted by coronavirus restrictions, and the funding will be largely composed of loans. And they say it's the most generous of any government for its domestic sports sector in the world, and will focus on sports severely impacted over the winter. And it then, at the end, it lists the sports that can expect some kind of funding or can apply for some kind of funding. And it says preliminary, I'll stress that word, breakdown of funding by sport based on needs assessment. And it goes through each sport, rugby union, football, rugby league, etc. And some of them have got lots of bullet points underneath them. Rugby union, for example, have got rugby football union, premiership rugby clubs, championship rugby clubs, and rugby clubs below championship. Under horse racing, it just says bullet point, race courses, 40 million. I think the person putting that together probably wasn't strong on the detail of horse racing.
And we did ask in an edition of this podcast a couple of weeks ago, do racecourses hold the balance of power in the UK? On that basis, the answer is yes. Specifically and more personally to this question, we need to get the view of the chief executive of the Racecourse Association, David Armstrong. I've been talking to him. I began by asking him his reaction to the fact that racing or racecourses would be getting this £40 million loan.
Well, initially, the initial reaction, of course, is that we're absolutely delighted. When the return of crowds was delayed from the original promised date of the 1st of October, Oliver Dowden said that the government would come together and put a package on the table to support those sports most affected, and that's what they've done. So we were delighted to get that news last week.
And how do you think that the money is going to arrive with you, and how is it going to be distributed? Where is the first port of call, if you like?
Well, we simply don't know yet, Nick, actually. We're expected to get details of how the package works today. We expect it to be largely in the form of loans on generous terms. But how that's going to be administered, which organisations are eligible to apply, what the sequence might be, we don't know yet. So we should find out more about that during the course of the next day or two anyway.
I mean, do you expect yourselves to be administering the money, i.e. a sport body would get the 40 million and then it would be up to you to distribute it?
No, I think that's unlikely. The way government have explained it is the fund will be administered by Sport England, who will set the criteria by which various organisations can apply directly for the funding. So a racecourse or whatever would apply to that organisation being managed by Sport England rather than by or via one of the bodies within the sport, such as the BHA or the RCA.
So how do you go about making sure that this is a fair process and the money reaches the most deserving recipients? Because I'm guessing if it's a free-for-all and anyone can apply, there could be a degree of chaos.
I expect when we see the guidance as to how the loan scheme works, we'll probably be able to answer that question much more easily. At this stage, we don't know yet exactly how it will work, and we stand ready, both the BHA and the RCA, to support applicants that may wish to or may be able to apply to the new fund. But the detail of who can apply and how that's done, we still don't know.
But you're happy to act in conjunction with the BHA as some sort of arbiter if needs be?
I don't think we'll be asked to be an arbiter, to be honest, Nick. And of course, the horse fund will be a key part of that process as well. So I'm waiting to see how it'll work. I don't think we'll be asked to be an arbiter. I think the arbiter, if you like, is more likely to be that Sport England body I mentioned.
Okay, in your view, how do you think the money is best spent?
Well, I think there's lots of potential ways of doing that. The devil will be in the detail of what we're allowed to do and not allowed to do, which we expect to find out shortly. I think there are plenty of areas where support is needed. That'll be race courses that have lost crowds through the winter months in particular. There will be gaps where prize money is not sufficient. And there will be other organisations that are suffering significant hardship as well. So at this stage, it's difficult to know if there's a prioritisation at all or how it would be done, because we just don't know how the scheme's going to be administered yet.
Okay, so last week the Racehorse Owners Association suggested that if racecourses receive the lion's share of the money, they hope that there would be a trickle-down effect that would see all stakeholders being beneficiaries. Is there a way of the tripartite agreement ensuring that that happens?
I think the devil's going to be in the detail, Nick. I mean, obviously what you have to be careful of is when you take a loan, the body that takes the loan or the organisation that takes the loan has to be able to repay it. And although the terms might still be quite generous, in fact, we're hoping they're very generous, it's still the case that the organisation that takes the loan has to be able to repay it. So that'll be a key part of the thinking in terms of how the funding is distributed. And I hope that it'll be done in a way that will allow all parts of the sport to benefit, bearing in mind that point about who has to make the repayments.
Okay. I'm guessing this is what Nick Rust was referring to when he said to Cornelius Lysett on yesterday's Luck on Sunday, we need to work on a package that means the sport works together in paying this money back. If it's only racecourses that can borrow, then frankly, why would they all want to take on additional loan burdens without the sport providing a way through to help them with these loans? Are you on the same page there?
Yeah, no, Nick's spot on with that. That's exactly what I was referring to. If a racecourse takes on a loan and distributes that money to someone else, how is it going to repay the loan in due course? It may be the terms of the loans are likely to be generous, so the repayments might not start immediately, but ultimately that racecourse would still have to make those repayments. So that does make it very difficult for them to take on additional loans. Of course, in the current environment, many of them have got loans on their balance sheets already, and therefore may or may not be very keen to have further debt.
But I suppose you make the point that if the racecourses have taken on the loan and then pass on the money that they've been loaned, it makes it nigh on impossible for them to pay that loan back. So they won't really want to be passing on the loan. They'll want to be using that loan within the confines of their structure, organisation, balance sheet.
And I think that's why I refer back to the point about the devil being in the detail about how the loans are distributed and what the terms are. If we knew that now, it might be easier to work out what the solution will be. But we're waiting until we receive that information and then put our heads together as a sport and work out the best structure to go forward with.
And do you think that, I think you can answer this. Do you think that you need to assess this in terms of hardship, in terms of which businesses are struggling the most, are the most deserving? Is that a reasonable contention to make?
Well, I think that sort of positioning may well be part of the terms of the funding package when we see them. And we will have to look and see what we're required to do to demonstrate hardship or otherwise as we look at how loans are made and allocated. So once we see the terms and understand if hardship is a specific measure required for the distribution of loans, then that'll clarify that point for us.
So if a racecourse is really struggling, it is going to be prioritised ahead of a racecourse that isn't?
Again, the devil's in the detail, Nick. I wish I did have the detail and I could explain it to you all in full, but I don't know what it says yet. So the terms of the fund that Sport England will be administering may well make determinations like that about the need to prioritise hardship, or it may not. So until we've seen it, it's a bit difficult to comment.
Do you, I mean, I asked this last week to one or two people, do you see the fact that racing has been a recipient of the 40 million loan as vindication of racing's policy making over the last few months?
I wouldn't say exactly vindication. I think it's great to see government support for the sport. And of course, we've all been working hard behind the scenes to underpin that support. So we are pleased that government have recognised and understand the challenges we face and are happy to come to the table and help us out during that time. So it's rather than a vindication, I think it's more a confirmation that those relationships are strong.
Nick Rust also made mention yesterday of the return of the potential return of the pilot scheme, which understandably enough has not been at the forefront of a lot of people's minds since the second lockdown. Can you update me on any progress there?
Well, we're waiting to see what happens with announcements about government coming out of the country coming out of lockdown, which we understand there may be some explanation of that today and tier structures and things like this. Behind the scenes, the STIG, that's the Sports Technology Innovation Group, has been working hard with government and with major sports to look at what technological enhancements might be needed to help us bring back crowds quicker and in larger numbers. That would include things like mass testing, digital passports, and ultimately, of course, vaccines. So that work's all going on behind the scenes. And when government feel ready, I'm sure we'll hear about a new pilot program.
David, thanks so much for talking to me today.
No problem. Thank you, Nick.
David Armstrong there. Lydia, is the devil in the detail, do you think?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I mean, the only thing we do know is that this is going to be a loan and not a grant. So compare it to the Cultural Recovery Fund for the Arts. This is a loan. It is going to have to be paid back at some point. So it really essentially addresses cash flow in the short to medium term rather than anything else. But we don't know most of the fundamental things we need to know. We don't know. You know, number one, what is the interest rate of these loans? Two, what's the period of repayment? Three, who signs the contract and is therefore responsible for repayment? I can see that David is of the view that racecourses seem to be the ones that are eligible rather than any kind of governing body. I mean, I think that the word, going back to that word preliminary and the wording of the press release, I think that that's not necessarily a done deal in that way. I think there is some wriggle room in terms of arguing in the specific way that horse racing is set up, that there might be other ways in which to find that money. Then we have, you know, where does that money go? That's for racing to think about. And of course, and how long is the due diligence going to take? How long is the process of actually applying for these loans and getting the money? How long is that going to take, and on what basis is Sports England going to make its needs-based assessment? And of course, there's a massive political implication to this, both externally from the sport and internally for the sport. Externally, you know, what if the interest rate isn't particularly favourable, or the terms of the repayment or the period of the repayment aren't particularly favourable? And under normal circumstances, you know, a business might say, well, actually, I don't fancy those terms. I'm not taking up a loan in those circumstances. But these are obviously not normal times. But if racing doesn't make access of this hardship fund in some kind of way, then isn't government going to say afterwards, when we try and talk about levy reform being required and the whole funding basis of our sport needing restructuring, they're going to say, well, you didn't need the money then. How come it's such a pressing case? So there's a political pressure on racing to actually prove that it needs this money. And I'm not arguing that we don't. It's just that I'm talking about we don't know the details on which we would be obliged to take it. And also internally, racecourses who have had their prize money for their races wholly supported by the levy board, or in the majority supported by the levy board. And meanwhile, they've been able to get their business going. I'm not saying they haven't been affected. Obviously, in particular, the largest racecourses, the ones that rely for a great deal of their money on people coming through and actually being at their racecourses, the crowds. But others have been able to get their media rights income, and certain racecourses, smaller racecourses as opposed to larger racecourses, have been less affected by this because the greater reliance of their business model is on those media rights. But meanwhile, the rest of the sport, the horsemen, are looking at the prize money and saying, well, we need some trickle down into our ends of the business. So there is going to be internal pressure in the sport on racecourses to take up these loans again, and we don't yet know what the terms of those loans are.
Where I was also unsuccessful there, talking to David, was trying to work out who it was going to be that was going to make these needs-based assessments. Because otherwise you've got a situation where there are hundreds of interested parties asking for a portion of this £40 million and nobody to really determine who is more deserving than the other, or no one single unified racing body to determine who is more deserving than the other.
No, for external of the sport, the press release from last week says the funding process will be overseen by an independent decision-making board and supported by Sport England. So, again, more detail required there. But you make the point that, you know, internally, there needs to be a coordinated and cogent accessing of this loan, if that is, if the terms are deemed collectively to be suitable. Essentially, you know, if there is money available at no interest, or, you know, a minimal interest rate, then that becomes an attractive proposition, doesn't it? Because it enables the sport, I think ideally we would say, to potentially say drip feed it into prize money as the levy board contribution trails off, because they're not able, the levy board aren't going to be able to sustain overpaying, over supporting horse racing in this way, you know, beyond June. That is just not going to be able to happen, because at the moment they're paying more money out than they are getting in, and obviously that is self-evidently unsustainable. So if you can access a loan in the short term on favourable terms that you can drip feed into prize money to keep prize money up as levy board contribution goes down, and then, you know, collectively find a mechanism whereby that money is paid back, and is that going to require, I mean, I don't yet discount the idea that some form of body collectively will be able to apply to Sport England for this. I mean, you know, for example, previously when there was the authorised betting partnership, I think there was a collective BHA, RCA, Horseman Limited agreement, you know, they signed that. Well, is there something similar that can happen here? And ultimately, that comes down to, in the long term, horsemen and racecourses paying more to the BHA every year, so that the BHA can pay it back, if that was the route that they sought. But, you know, would the BHA, you know, be able to as a body, in the way that it's structured and the income it has at the moment, be able to pass the hurdles that Sport England would put up? We just don't know. We just don't know. But there is going to have to be some way in which the sport comes together with a strategic way of applying for this, because if it's just piecemeal, it's going to be self-evidently, plainly daft.
Well, I think the victory of Bristol Domais in the Betfair Chase at Haydock Park on Saturday was the first performance of the National Hunt season that really reminded everyone why they enjoy the winter game. Bristol Domais's co-owner is Simon Maneer, who joins me now. Simon, like so many, you weren't able to be there live to watch the horse at Haydock. Just talk me through how you were feeling watching from afar.
Well, it's naturally incredibly exciting. Bristol was third favourite, so the pressure was off in terms of people thinking that he wouldn't be able to beat Lost in Translation again, and we'd heard and read that Clander's Oboe was fit and ready to roll. But naturally, not being able to be at Haydock isn't ideal. But it's great that racing is going ahead, and racing continues to operate in these very, very difficult times. So it was nerve-wracking, but our sort of policy has always been to let the horses do the talking, and Bristol most definitely did do that on Saturday.
And you've had lots of good horses, and some have really lived up to expectations, others haven't. You've got a lot of context within which to judge this horse and what he means to you as well, I guess.
Well, I mean, he's been remarkably consistent. We've had him since his juvenile year. I have to give Nigel and his team a lot of credit to prepare a horse to come out first time out without a race course gallop, to perform the way he did on Saturday, shows what an amazing trainer Nigel is, and his team, Richard Sparky Bevis, who rides him every day. They've done an incredible job, not forgetting that was the third time he's won the Betfair Chase.
How touched were you when you saw Daryl speak about the horse? Because there are very few jockeys who can develop quite such a bond with one horse.
Well, Daryl's not only got a bond with Bristol, but he's got a bond with Anthony, Isaac and myself. And in Team Double Green, we love that. We try to operate as a team. It's not about one person. It's about the horses and the team every year progressing and improving. And we're always trying to do things and be innovative in the way we think and in the kind of horse that we buy.
And when you took Daryl on, he was at, I guess, an uncertain ebb in his career, but it's a partnership that's worked incredibly well. What is it about him as a guy and as a rider that you admire?
Well, I think not only his riding skills, but as a person, he's given heart and soul to our project. He's really committed. He rides work on all the horses. He gets to know the horses. And that dovetails very well with Anthony and the trainers and Isaac and I. So it's a unit with a common aim. And Daryl is a very, very important part of that. And when he fell off Holstone the race before, we were obviously at very anxious, nervous moments, not only primarily for Daryl and his welfare and Holstone's welfare, but also what we would do if he wasn't able to ride Bristol to May, because he knows the horse so well.
We've talked to so many owners over the last 3 or 4 months, and they have various levels of enthusiasm for racing as it stands at the moment. Has the current situation in any way diminished your enthusiasm or not?
No, it hasn't diminished our enthusiasm. I mean, both in our childhood years, Isaac and I, apart from having many other common interests, we both loved the horse as children. And in terms of racing, you know, we have put together a team of horses who we take great pleasure from watching and following daily. We've got contact WhatsApp feeds with all of our trainers who post us pictures and videos of the horses training. So of course it's not as good as being there in person, but in today's world, with technology, whether it be Zoom or WhatsApp, and obviously TV, and the great job that the TV channels are doing in covering racing, it's the next best thing. And in these times of COVID, one has to get a sense of proportionality and understand that people are going through very difficult times. And the fact that we're even able to watch our horses race on TV is a privilege, and it's something to be very grateful for.
It's quite nice to hear, because there has been an awful lot in the last few months about how owners aren't really getting their name in lights enough. I mean, I'm biased because the Racehorse Owners Association is associated with this podcast, but you know, I'd like to think from an objective point of view, you see the fact that clearly ITV are making a massively greater effort to incorporate owners into their coverage. I don't really know how much more media companies can do as things stand.
I think personally it's about the horses being in lights, and Bristol Demay's deserving his win on Saturday. And for myself and Isaac, I don't think we really need our names to be in spotlights or to have media coverage. I think being associated with a great horse like Bristol and owning him and watching him win is enough. I mean, I don't see the benefit or the need to have your name in spotlights.
It's in some way a futile question, because I sort of think Bristol Domais done everything he needs to have done for this particular period. But do you have a way in which you'd like to see him pick his way through the rest of this season?
Well, I mean, I think every owner that comes into National Hunt Racing, I think there's one race that everybody dreams about that's an iconic race, and that's the Grand National. So clearly for both Isaac and I, it's a race that we would love and dream to win. And, you know, if you speak to people across the globe who don't really know about racing, if there was one race that they could name in the sphere of National Hunt Racing, it would be the Grand National, and probably in flat racing it would be the Derby. So we did enter Bristol last year for the Grand National, but obviously the entry meeting was cancelled. But I think probably what we will do is go to the Cotswold Chase in January, and then make a decision after that, depending on how he were to run in January.
Do you think your nerves could handle it if he ran in the National?
Well, it would probably be easier to watch it on television than be there in person.
Well, the good news is that will definitely be possible. Simon, I really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you. And it was a joy to watch him do what he does best.
That's a pleasure, Nick. Yeah. I've watched a recording of the race so many times. So it's amazing. He came out of the race well. So that's the most important thing.
Well, Lydia, lovely to hear from Simon Maneer, and even lovelier to see Bristol Domais doing what he does best around Haydock.
He is quite brilliant around Haydock. He got into that lovely metronomic rhythm, which he has done previously, that's won him now three Betfair chases. I mean, his best performance there obviously remains that devastating 57-length defeat of Cucard back in 2017, which was a record margin that a grade one had been won by. That was in very testing ground as well. Here, I think he was helped by Bells Hill, keeping him interested in the first circuit. But it was a really joy to see him when Clandis Oboe moved up and briefly looked threatening, you know, just turning the screw and keeping on galloping. He is a marvellous horse. And this is an absolute example of why all racing is interesting from start to finish of the season. That year that I mentioned, that 2017 year when he won the Betfair Chase, I'm sure that was the best performance of the season. And we shouldn't forget that the best performances can come in lots of different races, including this one. I don't expect this to be the best performance of the season, but it is going to be up there.
The Road to Cheltenham host nearly said the words, "It's not all about Cheltenham," but you just stopped short of that.
No, it isn't all about Cheltenham. it really isn't all about Cheltenham. I mean, all the way through my interest in horse racing and my journalistic career, I've very much strongly argued against the idea that we should sacrifice the whole of the jump season on then three, now four, days in March. There are very, very important races that are run throughout the year. And it's the same with flat racing. I mean, I'm against the calling of valid Group 3 and Group 2 races trials. I think that diminishes their meaning in their own right.
And on course, perhaps, for the Grand National, which would certainly enliven our interest in that race, as if it needed any further enlivening. There's important racing today at Kempton, because Shishkin, who could yet be the next star, is already a bit of a star, is making his steeplechase debut.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating, isn't it? Really, really interesting. And you know, decent opposition. Mick Pastor's in there. I know he fell last time we saw him, but you know, it's not a complete gimme there. But Shishkin was very, very good when winning the Supreme Novices. He lost his position and then rallied. overcame what could have been a chance ending hampering at the second last, and he came through very strongly to deny Abacadabras, and we've seen already this season from Abacadabras that he is a high level 2 mile hurdler. Fishkin was immediately run the potential champion hurdler, and so Nicky Henderson is taking him to Kempton, a race course that he very much supports. And he was very vocal when there was that threat overhanging the course, which obviously isn't completely gone, but isn't, you know, we hope it has receded to the point of non-existence. He was very, very vocal about how this course offers people preparing horses for spring festivals the opportunity to access non-bog-like ground during the course of the winter part of the season. And that is Kempton and Musselburgh and Ludlow, you could argue, key functions during the course of the season. They provide non-bog-like ground, and Kempton is a pivotal part of Cheltenham and Aintree and all the other top events that come on later on in the season.
And so say all of us, or so say all of me anyway. Newbury this weekend, I could do with a dry week, I think, and we've got the Ladbrokes Trophy. It's a really open looking handicap. They're betting 7 or 8 to 1 the field at the moment, Lydia. Is that where you're going to finish up today?
It is, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't feel like there's a future Gold Cup horse in this race, which you can often have from a second season chaser in the Ladbrokes Trophy. I am going for a horse that is a second season chaser, and that is 2 for Gold. And I thought he ran perfectly promisingly over a deeply inadequate trip at Wetherby last month. And I think stepping back over 3 miles on a galloping track in testing ground, that's going to be excellent for him. I think his jumping is a massive asset. If you just want to go back and have a look at his Warwick win in January, you'll be able to see that. And I think he's in for a fine season, and the Ladbrokes Trophy is exactly the right place to start.
Lydia, thank you so much. Thank you very much for listening once again. My thanks to Simon Maneer and to David Armstrong a little earlier on. That was Monday, November the 23rd. We'll see you the same time tomorrow. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.